My name is Jacqueline Johnson. I live in Mineola, Kansas, but our farm is in Englewood, Kansas, and I am a farmer.
And how old are you?
And I am 66 years old.
Okay. So when did you first become aware of the Starbuck fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire of March 6th?
I became aware of it as I got home from Dodge City that day. I had been coming back from Dodge and was dodging around the Dodge City fires to get back home. And I get home and I see on Facebook, I just happened to pick it up and I saw on Facebook, pray for Englewood. And I called the person that had posted that and I said, why are we praying for Englewood? And they said they're having to evacuate because of a fire. And that started my journey south. I hollered for Dean and we headed south to Englewood to see what we needed to do or what we could do.
So about what time?
By that time it was probably 3:30, I suppose. When I first became aware of it, it was like 3. And then probably by 3:30 we were on the road trying to figure out how to, looking at the fire, because when I came from Dodge City, I couldn't see that fire. It wasn't there. It traveled that fast. And by that time, we could really see the fire, and we could also see the fire over at Denton's, but we kept coming down. Well, when we got to the 12-mile corner, Sandy was there, and she was saying, you can't go any further. And I said, oh, yes, I can, Sandy, because my dad's place is there. And she goes, well, you tell them that I said you couldn't go. And we headed on south. Now, we did go to the west and took the old, it's in Meade County, it's called the McKinney Road. I don't know the number of the road, but it goes up and down. I took old Highway 160 and then headed south. We then came back, and as we got to David's place, there was people on both sides, and they were trying very hard to save the house. And as you know, and of course, we're trying to get further south. David drives up in his truck, and we ask him, can we get through? Because we could see that the tree shelter belt at David's was burning. And he said, yes. And he said, and I said, yes, do you know if Dad's house is still there? And he said, yes. And I said, okay. And as we went by the gigantic Quonset hut at David's, which I was told in my childhood that that was the biggest Quonset that was ever built, was that one. I don't know if that's true, but I know George R. Thies, and he always did the best with everything he did, and so I'm not surprised. And it went down, and it was like looking into hell. It really was. As right as we went by, that building went down. And it was like, oh my. And we headed on south. And there was so much smoke. And by that time, the wind had changed.
Coming out of the north?
Yes, it had started to come out. It was actually coming out of the northwest. And so it enabled us to get by David's shelter belt. That shelter belt, and we headed south. Well, we couldn't see because of the smoke, and I could see better than Dean, and so I kept saying, a little more to the left, a little more to the right, trying to, you know. But anyway, we got to the house, and it was like shock, because the house, nothing had burned, the whole place was fine, and it's like, how did that happen? It's okay. And yet, the fire had changed. We had lost the west shelter belt, which went on a half mile west of the house. That had burned up, but the shelter belt north of the house had not burned up. But all of those trees were still smoldering and sparking and everything. And so we figured that the house was going to catch on fire, because I have no idea where the firemen were at that time. I have no idea. And Dean asked me, he said, what do you want to save? And I had some of my mom's quilts stored there, and I said, "Mom's quilts." And I took those and we left. And we did not know if we would have a place there the following morning, because the wind by that time was really pushing towards the house, and I just figured it would catch it, but it never did.
Did you go on to, into Inglewood?
No, we didn't. We what we did was we took the, well, the locals call it the roller coaster road. That would be BB Road, and went back towards the highway. We figured we better get out of there. It was like, once we got on the highway, it was like driving on the moon.
What kind of things did you see or not see?
Drift. The dirt had drifted, because behind that, down at Inglewood, once the fire was over, you never saw any ash. It, that rolling wind behind the fire had picked up enough dirt and ash, and the ash was actually a half inch under the dirt. And so what you saw was drifted dirt. That's what you saw. And we just came slowly and got out of there. And then went home to Mineola. And the following morning, we were down there at 6 o'clock to see what we had.
Did you have anything left?
Yeah, we did. The house was fine. And I was most appreciative of our firefighters and the county and everyone, because the county had come in and put up 2 berms on the west side of the house. The fire went over the first berm, but it stopped at the second. And then the county had come in and gone around the yard twice spraying water for the firemen, the local firemen, and I think that's what kept those sparks from catching.
Did they foam the house?
No.
They just did water?
Yeah.
Did you lose fence and pasture land?
About 9 miles of fence and pasture. Anything other than right there at the house, everything else was burned.
Did you have any cattle?
We had cattle on us, but we did not own any of them.
Did they lose any of them?
Yes. Terry Maffitt was the... he's the one that rents our land, and he, between his place, which is on further south right there, and ours, he had a herd of 300 and he had 80 left. Yeah, it was bad. However, there was a little miracle. There were 2 or 3 things that happened that were kind of funny. The first one, I kept saying to, there was one little firefighter guy, and I don't know his name, but he lives out there west of town on the old Green Ranch.
Is it Evan?
Yeah. He was standing there, and he was told to stay there, south of the house. And I said, "Well, you know you can get more water at the irrigation well." And he just kind of shrugged. So I finally went down to the irrigation well. And the irrigation well burned for 2 days, the engine. So I don't think it was usable. But I have since fixed it up again so that the firefighters can use it if they need to. But, yeah, it was gone. Everything was gone there. But I looked, when I was down there, I was looking at that, because, of course, that shelter belt there had also burned up. And again, it was that real high temperature. The bark was falling off and everything. But I looked up to the hill, and we had an old silo in the hill, and the old cows were walking out with their calves. What they had done was go in the silo, the fire rolled over them, and then they walked out. They weren't hurt.
So did you see a lot of cattle that perished in the fire?
Yeah.
Did you help destroy cattle, or?
No.
Just came back and did your own house. Did you see places where maybe the fire got close to the house? Like no ember strikes on the house or anything?
No, didn't see any at all. It was, Adam made a comment later. He said, you know, if the trees were about 100 yards away from the house, it seemed like that kept the house from burning. And all of our trees were about 100 yards away from the house. I remember complaining about this when I was a child because I had to mow that, but I guess I shouldn't complain too loudly.
Not anymore, huh? So what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
I think the thing that I remember the most in this part of the world, if we see smoke, we investigate and we take care of it. For the next 2 or 3 days, everybody just ignored it. There was smoke coming out from trees that were down, you know, it was down inside the ground, and there was just smoke and everything everywhere. And we all just ignored it, which I thought was so strange because we had never done that, but we had to. And in fact, Terry, he stepped, I had to laugh. He was wearing a tennis shoe and his work boot. And I finally said, okay, tell me why you're wearing a tennis shoe and a work boot. Well, he had stepped down into one of those smoke areas. And his work boot, the metal in the work boot had just crunched up. So he had to cut it off his foot. And he was so dang busy, he didn't have time to go buy another pair of work boots. So it was 2 or 3 days before he finally got a chance to buy some new work boots. I think that was the thing that I was... The other thing that for me, personally, was in 10 minutes, my life turned. I was going one direction, and all of a sudden, in 10 minutes, I was made to go another direction. I think of the people in Houston right now, and I look at that, and I go, they had 2 or 3 days warning. We didn't have any. It was there, and then it was gone. You know, gardeners, their house burned, and as the crow flies, that's about 5 miles from my parents' house. And they estimate it took about 10 minutes from my parents' house to Gardner's house for that fire. That's moving pretty fast.
Yeah, so do you have any knowledge or experience with wildfires before this or controlled burns? Or
Well, yes, through the years as I was growing up, Dad would go fight fires. My job was to make sandwiches. That was my job, and provide water.
So do you have any family history about range fires, what they thought about them or how they tried to control them if there was a fire?
In that area, they've always tried really hard to control. David and I, actually, because we're neighbors, have talked about doing some control burning. And there is a piece that we share, fence line, and we've talked about control burning that area. But it won't be for a couple years anyway that happens.
Did
but
some of the fire take care of some of what
it
you
It took
had
it all. If it could burn, it did. The only thing that we had left were the wheat fields. And we had, in various places, we had a section of wheat fields. And two of them we immediately gave up and put Terry's cows on there. Because everywhere it was just dirt. It was nothing but dirt. And we were afraid the cows would get dirt pneumonia. And so we were trying very hard to get the cows off the dirt. And so we just gave those two up so that he could have that for his cows.
So after the fire, did you volunteer or did you have volunteers come help you?
We had volunteers.
And where did they come from? And what did they do?
Oh, gosh, everything. I'm sorry. The first group helped us do one of the wheat fields. David and I had about 5 years ago redone the fence, but they had redone the corner posts with hedge, and of course that's what burned. And so I had called Spots and got 2 dozen corner posts, came over, picked them up. We started working on it, getting corner posts in so we could use that wheat field because there were no fences anywhere. I mean, nowhere were there fences. And so we started finishing that one up, and I called to Randall Spare and said, we need some help, if you have some. And he sent us a young man that had been David's, he had done some work with David the year prior as part of his schooling, and then a girl and another young man. They had given up their spring break to come, and they helped us do that all the way around. And then that was the first group. The second group were from up Wallace County, and they helped us do some pickup of things, and then started again with more fencing. You know, we just gradually have worked on fence throughout the summer. But, and then the third group was the most interesting because they were from Iowa, and there was about 13 of them. And again, David's the one that called me and said, we have these guys from Iowa. Do you have some fence? Oh my goodness, David had a mile and a half of fencing that was put in 2 days. I had 2 miles of fencing they put in 2 days. Then they went on down to Walker's, and I don't know where else they went. But they were just a group of guys, and I think they were somewhat religious, but I don't know that they were with any group. But they had all kinds of equipment and everything, and they just built that fence so fast it was unbelievable.
So what did you do for water for the cattle that you put on wheat?
We had windmills.
And none of your windmills were tanks or anything were bothered by this?
You know, one of the things we do as a routine in our, at least I do, I don't know other people, but I always keep water in my tanks. I generally have fiberglass tanks, and I keep water in there simply because I don't want the wind to blow them around, but I also think it's a safer thing anyway, because I kind of promote wildlife as well.
So did you see lots of dead wildlife in with the cattle?
I didn't. I didn't see a lot of dead wildlife, but boy, did I see the coyotes. So I know that there was a lot of dead wildlife around. And it was funny, we had a herd of deer that were at the house.
Oh. Yeah.
Because that was the only grass that was there for miles around was that. And so we had a herd of deer there.
So did they dispose of some of the cattle on your property, or did they do it somewhere else?
They moved them. Terry has some pens, and they moved all the cattle over to those pens and examined them closely and then sorted them out and did it. That was so hard, though. Everybody had their jaws clenched for 3 days till that was done. You know, it was so hard.
They had lots of help, right? The vets came and helped?
Yes, there was a female vet, and I don't know where she was from. Not here, somewhere else. I think she was an OSU vet. But anyway, she dropped off the college kids and went on over and helped Terry, so I don't know. But
so, who were some of the people or agencies that proved most helpful during the fire or after the fire?
My neighbor David Clausen was awesome. He was the most help. And he kind of realized that, you know, there were things that David has access to that I don't. And so he was excellent help. I was quite surprised. I filled out both the KLA and the Ashland Community Foundation and received money from both and was most grateful for both. You know, I was quite surprised about it. I was shocked at the amount of help that we received from the ag community. And, you know, it's one of those things that now we got to spend our time giving back. I always like to pay it forward, but this time I'm going to have to pay it back.
So what was your reaction when you found out all those people were coming or that they were donating hay? And
well, I was thankful because I had hay. I had 100-some bales of hay that had not been moved off the property to, they had already been sold, but they had not been moved off the property. And, of course, they burned up. And so, you know, knowing that these people were there and they would have help to get through the next few months was unbelievable, because there was nothing for the cattle to eat. I mean, outside of, we did use those two fields of wheat, but you know how wheat is. It gets kind of icky as it gets older, and it was right on the edge anyway. There, you know, that time of year, we would have been pulling them off anyway.
Instead of putting them on.
Yeah.
Yep. So, did you ever go into Inglewood and partake of some of the meals that they had there, or come over to Ashland and eat at the camp or the high school? Or
no, basically didn't even know that that was happening. Just went down there, worked, cleaned up, started getting things together, trying to figure out, like, one of my first jobs was to go around all the land and figure out where I needed fence and all that. We didn't know about it. Now, several days later, or maybe even 2 weeks later, we found out that there was stuff at the Christian church camp. And I had requested some help, so I was waiting on them. And they told me I could take. And so I took, like, a case of water and some gloves and some stuff like that. And then when they started donating the fencing, Greg Goodnight took the fencing for Inglewood, and then down to Inglewood to his place, and then he'd send us out. You know, you've got X number of T-posts, X number of rolls of wire, so on and so forth, and we'd go down and pick that up. But we didn't. No, we didn't know about the food.
So where's your fencing now? How are you doing? Are you about done or got a good start?
We've got a good start. We've got a good start. I just met with the guy day before yesterday, and he finally got to my area, and so he's going to be working on it, I'm thinking, this next week, but it might be the week after.
So what are your pastures looking like?
They, from the road, they look great, but when you get out in them, they're not there. However, did you see my picture of my, the other day I took a picture and posted it on Facebook when I went down there to work that day. The pastures were alive with sunflowers, just absolutely alive, and it was so pretty. And I have heard, I don't know that this is true, but I have heard that when you see sunflowers like that, that the next year, wherever that sunflower was, there will be a clump of grass. That's old cowboy lore, but I've heard that. And several people, there was a lot of people liked the picture, and then they also said, yes, we've heard that too. So let's hope that's true, because those pastures were absolutely alive. Well, it needs to thicken up, or we're not going to be able to put very many cattle on them. And some of the pastures, you can see how bad some of them were. Mm-hmm. They've not come back well.
So did you have a lot of physical or financial loss caused by the fire?
Both. We did. I'm kind of estimating that there was probably around $75,000. Insurance, I'm in the process of changing policies. The first thing when I called, well, we don't pay for fence. Okay. Well, we don't pay for hay. Okay. And then it was all the way through. It was just, you know, the amount of depreciation, the amount of everything, the insurance. I think I finally got a check for like $15,000.
So you lose all your irrigation or just the engine?
Just the engine. And the pumps didn't seem to be hurt. I had someone come and check the pumps, but they didn't. They weren't hurt. And in fact, the irrigation we've had working now that I've bought a new engine.
So long-term effect, physically or financially, it's going to be a couple years before you recoup everything?
Oh, yeah, at least, if not longer.
Because you're not able to rent your pastures?
Well, that plus just, you know, the cost of depreciating out, you know, some of this stuff. Now, we'll see what the government pays on some of this fencing. We'll see. I don't know.
Were you amazed at the amount that the KLA and the...
I was. I was quite pleasantly surprised.
...were able to give?
Yes, I really was, and it was most appreciated.
How does that make you feel about the agricultural community?
Awesome.
What had you known about?
Well, I think, you know, out here, I think most of us have had some kind of tragedy happen. And out here, we mostly take care of it ourselves. And then something this big happened, and we didn't get any attention federally at all. My son, he lives and works in the Washington, D.C. area, and he was watching the FEMA website, and FEMA declared it a disaster, but there was never any money allocated for it. And in fact, the money that we've had allocated for it has been through USDA, not through FEMA. So it's been a total agriculture thing for us, people helping us and all that. It's not been others. It's just been the ag community. Somebody told me that there was a lady from upstate New York, her and her husband are dairy people, and she came out here and worked like crazy, you know. And I also heard stories from some of the people that were bringing supplies. A lot of them had signs. And when they would pull into a truck stop, they would fill up, and the owner would just say, Go on. Well, I don't know about you, but I know how much money that costs. That was a huge donation, and they never got a thank you at all, except from the people that were delivering. We don't even know who those people were. The same way with food. They would pull into a restaurant or somewhere to eat, and when they found out that they were coming here, they would just go on. So there's thousands of people that have helped us, and we're not even aware of them. But it's all been one-on-one, basically. It's not been through the government. We'll see how the government pays. We'll see.
Can you perceive of anything positive that came from this fire?
Oh, we got so much closer as a community. I think we've... I think we all became aware of how important all of us were to each other. I know the first time that I would see people, like, for example, the Walkers had come to Ashland to stay because their house had gotten a little bit burned, plus, you know, they were burned out down there. And the first time I saw them, you know, we're all hugging and everything. And, you know, so it was something that I think we all became a lot closer. You know, we know somebody else has our back, and we know that we have their back, too. In fact, David and I were talking about we had a benefit for a guy that found out he has cancer, and it's bad. And I don't know how much money was raised, but it was a lot. And you know, I was kind of afraid because he's not a real well-known person. We had had a benefit for Woody, you know, a while back, and it raised quite a little money. And I was kind of worried about that, but people really gave a lot. So I was really happy about that.
Do you perceive that how we interact with each other has changed a lot? And how about your neighbors out there? Did a lot of them have damages like yours, or better, worse, lose a lot?
Yeah, all of the above. Some people lost everything, such as Mary Cox. David lost everything, but he kept his house. He lost that big shed. He didn't really lose the barn. I was surprised he didn't lose the barn, but he didn't. So some people lost everything, but others, and we've all helped each other, I think, pretty much. David and I just had a conversation about, okay, who pays for what here? We need to get together. And I've had calls, from some of my other, okay, what do I need to do for you? And that kind of thing, so that we can get this done as far as fencing.
So you found it easier to take volunteer help than it was before the fire, or?
Well, I probably would never have taken volunteer help. Would you? I don't. I don't need any help. I don't need any help. And yet somebody said something the other day, which I thought was very, very true. The volunteers showed up. We were kind of walking around in a daze. And the volunteers showed up, and we had to start thinking about, okay, what can they do? And that made us start to focus in on what we needed to get done. Because, there for a day or two, we were just...
So when they did show up at your place, were you ready for them? Did you have something in mind that you needed done?
Well, we were busy doing those corner posts and getting that field ready to put cattle on.
So it made it easier to take them in?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what can you do, or have you done, to prepare for a fire in the future or some other disaster?
Well, obviously, the fencing, I think we've changed on what we're doing. We're doing a lot of metal, for the corner posts and everything. So we're doing a lot of that. That's the big thing for us, because not being able to keep the cattle where they needed to be was a huge issue. I mean, the cattle just went on walkabouts, And you didn't know. I mean, we had a moment of hysteria. Terry told me, he said, I put some cattle up in that pasture right south of your house. I said, okay, fine. Well, the following morning, because I was coming down about 6 o'clock every morning, I come down and I look over and I thought, well, I thought he was going to keep that wheat field, but maybe he's decided not to because there was a bunch of cattle on it. Well, 6 o'clock that night, he calls me. He goes, where's my cattle? I said, they're down at the Easter Day place. He goes, what are they doing there? I said, Terry, they were there when I got here at 6 o'clock this morning. I don't know. I thought you put them there. And so, no, they weren't supposed to be there. They had figured out a way to get out and had gone down there. And we had water there and everything, so... I just thought that's where they were supposed to be.
So what about the community? What kind of future plans can they make to, what can the community do to better prepare?
I think the first thing that needs to happen is we need to get those radios that the firemen need that go all over. Ford County just got them. And we need those. Big, because we've got a lot rougher terrain than even Ford County, and knowing where people are at is vital. That's the first thing as a community we need to do. I think we've always supported our firefighters very much. In fact, one firefighter told me one time at Inglewood, he said, we just don't have benefits because we get so much money, we feel guilty. And I think that's true, that we all feel like they are doing a very, very important job. And as far as some practical things, is it Ted Alexander over at Medicine Lodge? He's talking about putting in strips 40 yards. And so that the fires, can't jump that. Well, somebody said, well, the Starbucks fire would have jumped that. True, when it got here. But down there, at one point, it was a little fire. I don't know when that was, but it was a little fire at some point. And maybe a strip like that would have stopped it. I don't know. Because we have so much grassland here, it's very, very difficult. And it's the same way over there. And I don't think this is going to get to be less. I think we're going to have more of these fires.
Yeah. So what did you think of the wind that day?
Well, it was March wind. And it was regular old Kansas.
Yep.
It really was. I mean, it wasn't anything more or less than what it normally is. You just have to get out there and grit your teeth. And I wear a dust mask because I'm so allergic to a lot of that. But, you know, and work. That's what you have to do. But, yeah, I didn't think the wind was any worse than it normally is at that time of year.
So what do you notice most when you travel back down to your ranch from Mineola each day that's different from what it was before March 6th?
Well, like the other day with sunflowers. That was amazing. That was the first time I've seen them. I always feel sad about the shelter belts that are still, they've not been pushed over or cleaned up yet. Mine haven't either. I'm waiting on a bulldozer. So I miss that, and I think we'll all miss that as time goes on, because those trees did do a lot for us, whether we want to recognize that or not. I'm waiting for the last of this month, because at the Easter Day place where we had this big shelter belt and we had the irrigation and a lot of water and all that, the monarch butterflies used that as a stopping point on their way south. And I always, during the latter part of September, tried to get down there every day so I could see if they were there. And I'm hoping that they will still be there. I was going to tell Terry I want to run the irrigation. Even though we don't really need it, I want to run it so that it's there for the monarchs. Because it's amazing there's thousands of them when they come. You know, and they've always been there, so I don't know. We'll see.
So what do you miss most after the fire?
I didn't cry until about 6 weeks afterwards. And when I cried, it was because of the shelter belt.
Yeah.
And I remembered my dad putting those in. And they're gone. I'm hoping to rebuild, but I think everything else will come back. But the trees, it's going to take a long time.
So do you remember how old you were when they put the shelter belt in?
I was pretty young. I was about 10. So it was 56 years ago.
And they were like little trees.
Those little guys that you buy from the state, yeah.
And so you had three shelter belts?
Two shelter belts that burned up. Yeah, so, you know, and in fact, you know, Mom and Dad's house is lovely because it doesn't matter how bad the wind is, it's quiet in there. And so it's always been lovely down there, and people have commented on that, and it still is, but I think for me, that'll be the part that I miss the most. I guess I always say, you know, people talk about tree huggers in a negative way, and I always go, I'm a tree hugger. I live in Southwest Kansas. I'm a tree hugger.
When you had the volunteers come in, what were their impressions of the area? Did you get to talk to them about?
It was funny. They saw the beauty. And here it is, this blackened mess. And so I realized, you know, of course I've always realized how beautiful it is. But I realized how much other people would appreciate that if, you know, but it was amazing because a lot of our pastures are clear back in the middle of nowhere. And so there's miles of, you don't see anything except maybe a oil well or gas well. And that I think was the thing that they loved the most was the scenery. Even though it was, like I said, a blackened mess, they could see what it was going to be.
So now, have you been over east of Ashland?
Yes, I have.
And what did you think of over that way compared to Englewood?
Well, the wind, that back wind, must not have been so strong because you could see ash. And so that was, you know, but, oh, so many houses east of Ashland. Englewood lost a lot of houses, too. But, you know, you just, you know, of course, I probably know the county better than most because of my job that I used to have, but they're gone. Those houses are gone. Everything's gone, you know. And so for me, that's kind of hard. I also went west because I was talking to Todd, who is David's hard man, and I asked him, I said, there's this tree. I got to send it off to K-State. I got to go get it. It's over at the Painter pasture west of Englewood. And I asked somebody, I said, did we lose the tree? And Todd thought we had, but he didn't know what tree I was talking about. And hold on, I'm going to find it for you. But it didn't. It's this magnificent tree that stands out in the middle of everywhere, and at one time I saw 20 where is that doggone tree? I saw 20 head of cattle under it. It's a huge, gigantic, and I think, I'm not sure, but I think it might be an American elm. Mm-hmm. And if it is an American elm, because it's way out in the middle of nowhere, there is nothing else around it. And if that is the case, and it survived Dutch elm disease, they need to know about that tree, you know. So I hope that we can do that. We can, you know, but it was still there. It didn't get burned down. There was about a mile south is where the fire went through, and so that tree did not burn. I was so grateful.
So are there some landmarks that aren't there anymore since the fire? Some things that you used to use as cues to turn to a certain pasture or go, you know, go to somebody's house or something like that?
Where I go into the irrigation, that's, it's hard for me to find that anymore. It's very hard for me to find it. I have to, where is that? Because I always knew exactly where it was. So that's one of the places that I know about is that one. Other things, especially at Englewood, since I grew up there, I almost have a feeling like I've driven this far. So it's there, mm-hmm. You know, so I don't even look at corner posts or anything like that like I used to, because it's not that hard my mind just goes with the speed. It doesn't go with anything else. So
it's kind of ingrained after so long.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the way it is. With a lot of people down here, I know where you turn to go to my parents' house off the highway. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a really hard time with that one, but I know exactly where it's at. And so it's not hard for me to find it. I know that. So
what about friends that lived away from here? Did you have lots of people calling or Facebooking
you? Oh, yes. Oh,
asking
yes.
Asking how you were or what was going on?
Oh, yes. I have a lot of friends in the Washington, D.C. area. And they were like fascinated. And it's been interesting because, you know, we met on a trip to China, and then we got to know each other. We had a really good time. And so for them to see, because I posted a lot of the pictures and stuff like that, for them to see how my life was, they don't have any idea how my life is, because their life is getting up and going to work in heavy, heavy traffic and, you know, all the things that you do in a big city. And my life is getting up and going to work and taking pictures of sunflowers or whatever, you know. It's a completely different life, and a lot more physical. A lady that I buy makeup from, she said, well, can I, you know, she was trying to, she's back east as well. She lives in Florida, and I know, I buy stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, and she goes, well, can I send you something? And I said, yeah, moisturizer, lip balm, and sunblock. That'll do it. That's all I need. Moisturizer, lip balm, and sunblock. When you're building fence, you don't need to look real good.
Yep, that's true.
So, do you have any other thoughts about this experience that you'd like to share?
Well, just so much appreciation for what people have done for each other and how we all work together. And then the ag community. Oh, my gosh. I don't think I'll ever get over that. You know, Inglewood just sent 2 trailers of hay yesterday up to Montana. I don't know where they got the hay, but... But they did.
So, anything else you can think of?
No.
Okay. Well, we thank you for sharing your experiences with us and helping us with our...
What are you planning on doing with it?